The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. We're live on Man in Line today with the leader of Douglas City Council, Devon Watson, is in for the next 2 years. There were recent elections, and remember, Douglas City Council was responsible for many things, including housing, also in terms of leisure. There are the Glens, Nobles Park, Douglas Head, the Marine Gardens, and also what's now the Douglas City Library. But more to talk about in the next hour with Devon Watson. Call 66 13 68. Text 166 177, same WhatsApp number, or email studio at manxradio.com. It's a pleasure to welcome Devon Watson. Pastor Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are we?
Well, very well. How do you feel being the leader of Douglas City Council?
I feel great, but I mean, I'd feel even better if we had good weather for this TT, to be honest.
Okay. Was it your ambition to be leader? I mean, how did it come about?
Well, my ambition is to sort of do something to sort of sort out the housing crisis and get better services for ratepayers. And if this is a way that I can help make that happen, then that's 100% part of that. I think that people sort of fight or hunt for positions, but in reality, the focus needs to be on the customers receiving their service. It needs to be received. It needs to be done on the basis of ratepayers getting good value for money, and it needs to be on the value of that outcome there. And that's going to be ultimately up to the voters, right, in a few years from now.
Okay. You've said in the past you wanted expanded and improved services for Douglas City ratepayers. In what way expanded?
Okay, so one of the things that I'm quite keen on doing is really improving the quality of housing. That seems to be one of the core issues facing not only Douglas, but also facing the Isle of Man. And some of the things that we've done over the past few years, whilst I've been chair of social housing, is we've allocated 364 properties. That is one property every 4 days. That means a family is housed every four working days, which is great. Can we get that number higher? Yes. Should we get that number? Yes. We've doubled our response rate in maintenance times. We've opened up Peel Road apartments, which are some of the best social housing, not only on the Isle of Man, but in some of the British Isles. And we're going to top that and do even better with the Williston apartments opening up later this year. And I want to get another few apartment blocks and housing projects done before the end of this term, or get them underway so that my successors can open those after I sort of leave office.
Why are you so committed to housing, Devon?
Well, I pay almost £1,600 a month in rent. It's one of those with me and my roommates. But also, I see young people leave the island all the time. I see pensioners who are stuck in grinding poverty because they're stuck between sort of low pensions and high rental costs. I see essential workers who can't sort of make ends meet. And I see there's also the impact on everyone else. Even if your housing is doing fine, high property prices mean that high rental costs absolutely crush commercial businesses, particularly small local businesses. And this is a complaint I hear from people again and again and again. And it seems to be the core problem that we have. It's not only a Douglas issue, but it's a national issue.
How much of a job is a leader? How much of your time does it take?
I'd say about 20 to 30 hours a week, and I'm not putting enough time into it, even if that is the case. It's an unpaid role. It's a sort of volunteer role. You can get expenses for whilst you're in the meeting themselves, so I just want to sort of clear up that the idea that we get salaries as councillors. We absolutely do not. But yeah, I about 20 to 30 hours a week. But
so did you have a full-time job before you were leader?
Yeah, I did have a full-time job. I was working in telecommunications.
So you've given up your full-time job to take an unpaid role?
Yeah, 100%. And it's one of the things you have to do if you really want to do this properly. I know that in the past, sometimes people have had sort of secure sort of employment within certain places, or they have had their own businesses. If I was more of an entrepreneur, that's sort of the role I'd go down. And now I'm sort of working freelance. I'm doing some archaeological work, which is great, really helps make ends meet.
So what do your friends say about you giving up a full-time job to take on a voluntary role?
I mean, my friends question a lot of my decisions. I mean, not strictly linked to politics, but it's one of those where you have to do what you have to do. I mean, at the end of the day, the reason why we do this, and every other councillor, it's not a me thing, it's every councillor takes immense sacrifices in order to do this role. A lot of the people who work in public service take immense sacrifices to do this, where they could earn far more doing the same thing in private sector roles. Everyone involved in public service, and there are hundreds of thousands of people all over the British Isles and tens of thousands of people on the Isle of Man who make a range of sacrifices far larger than anything I will ever do in order to sort of give work and time back to charities. I mean, even if you look at the TT, the marshals today standing out there in that weather are unpaid, and they do an absolutely vital service for the Isle of Man. And that's really the glue that holds our society together. More people need to get out and get involved.
Okay. You've only just started, so I'll ask you a wide-ranging question. What will success look like to you in 2 years' time?
If I don't get tarred and feathered in the town square. But no, I mean, in reality, I think what success will look like is fewer people on our housing waiting list. It'll look like better park services. It'll look like rates that have risen not beyond the rate of inflation. It'll look like people who are sort of happy and satisfied with their services, and it'll be, do I get re-elected or not, or do I get challenged at election? We need more people engaged with local authority elections. We didn't have enough people running for office this time, and we need to have more people standing and running. So I would like to sort of make a call out to listeners. I know a lot of people are quite keen on local politics, so there's an empty seat in Douglas Central. So if any of your listeners are keen to run, we'd love to have them on board.
And what's that process of becoming that, going for the Douglas Central?
Yeah, so that'll be, we're going to declare a vacancy in a few weeks, and then that process will begin to count down toward an election. And we'll publicize that quite heavily at the time, but I'm really keen to get more people involved, get different ideas, and I want people to challenge us and hold us accountable.
Okay, let's get to the phones then, and Howard's first with us. Hi, Howard, you're live with Devon Watson.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Devon. I've just come down from Ballaquale Road, right down through the top of Prospect Hill, and Books Road, Woodburn Road. It's pretty miserable nowadays. It's a bit like a four-wheel, you know, and of course there's potholes, there's all sorts going down through there. And I thought, well, maybe after the promenade is finished, there might be something done with that. Now, I appreciate you're going to say to me, well, that's the DOI. But have the council, have they any input and have they any suggestions as to when that road is going to be improved? Because if you look from the Masonic Temple up through to Nutfield, the old children's centre, that is Limit Trinidad. That's the old asphalt. So that's at least 50 years old. And that road has been dug up numerous times and never successfully recoated. Is there any plans, or shall I say, are there any plans for that road to be resurfaced?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those, it's an extremely valid concern. I mean, I live not far from the Rosemount myself, so I walk down that road absolutely every day. And what you notice is, yeah, the pavements are cracked, the roads are potholed. And what happens is when repairs are made, very frequently what you see is, in order to keep costs down rather than the road being fully resurfaced, you see sort of it done in bits and pieces. And whilst that sort of limits disruption to an extent, it doesn't look great. And I really do think that one of the core areas of our town should look a lot better. So what we are doing is we're looking to have meetings with the DOI fairly soonish. And that's going to be one of the concerns we raise, is to say the roads in our capital and the pavements in our capital are not up to standard. But that does require more investment from central government.
And which is the council responsible for? Any of that?
No, we don't.
So not the pavements?
So pavements and roads aren't really a delegated authority to local authorities. So that's been centralised by central government.
So you what representations do you make to DOI?
So essentially what we do is we will, when we do have conversations with DOI, we will talk about a range of topics where we've got overlapping concerns with them that directly deal with us. And a lot of that will be housing or sort of concerns over parking or infrastructural petitions processes. But a big part of that as well will be sort of making more generalized concerns. So not only do we want to appeal for better roads and pavements in town, but we also want to say sort of see increased and improved public transport.
Okay, Howard?
Well, the Douglas Town Council as it was, of now Douglas City Council, and this has just moved from one side to the other, and that road down through there is pretty well disgraceful. And that is for the main, the capital of the island. And they, I put it down to say when they were doing the promenade, that was the main road to come into Douglas. Fine. The promenade is allegedly finished. So this is what I was asking. Are you pushing to have that road now resurfaced?
Okay. Will that be the top of the list, Evan?
Yeah, it will now. I mean, it's one of those things that I'm really keen on. Obviously, I've got quite a few concerns that I have. Nothing is more top of the list because to some folks, better public transport's at the top, housing's at the top, but that's definitely going to be a representation I'm going to make. So, Howard, thank you so much for that call. I couldn't agree with you more.
Appreciate it, Howard. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks, then. Bye now.
17 minutes past 12. Because you've said also that you want to make, I think I'm right there, you want central government accountable. You want? What do you mean by accountable?
So one of the reasons why democracy emerged on the Isle of Man in the first place was as a result of conflicts that existed between our borough council back in the day and central government. And a big part of that, you don't really hold them accountable by, I think, sort of complaining and sort of finding them on social media, but also by providing a model of ambition, right? And I think what we want to do with our housing projects is not just maintain what we have and scale back, but really show an ambitious path forward, or we want to sort of engage with government as a way of sort of pushing them to do better. Because at the same time, there is sort of limits on sort of democratic representation or accountability within Tynwald, so that has to come from local authorities in general.
So as far as the streets are concerned, DOI is pavements and roads. You're streetlights, aren't you?
We're streetlights, yeah.
You're streetlights. So as far as that's concerned, that's the one thing you can influence regarding that. Right, back to the phones, and I think it is Adam with us. Hi, Adam. You're live with Devon Watson.
Hi, Devon. Hi, Andy.
Okay.
I actually called. I didn't realise you were on with Devon today, but this may go and it's a good question to ask Devon, really. Is I went to watch some of the bikes last night, and I went, now I appreciate it's not the one, but I went to the little memorial hall in Union Mills, and I was a bit shocked to see that they're actually charging this year for people to enter. So for qualifying it's £5, and then on race days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, it's £20, and on the Saturday it's £15, but for two of the days it's closed for private hire. So I thought, that's really strange. I'll ring Brad and Commissioners and find out why it's changed, because a lot of us used to go and we used to throw a couple of pound in the tin just to sort of support the facility and the use of the chairs and stuff. And anyway, the lady I spoke to, she said that, no, it's not actually Brad and Commissioners that are running it, but supposedly one of their commissioners is taking it on as a private venture. Was her words, it's sort of like a private enterprise to make some money. So really, a good question to ask Devon is, for example, if a Douglas commissioner was to rent out a sort of Douglas council-owned property for some kind of business venture to make some money, to make a profit, would they have to publicly declare what they paid to rent it for or anything like that? I mean, what would the usual sort of, I suppose, process be for like public accountability and transparency in a similar situation for example, a Douglas building?
Okay, well, unusual question, Devon?
That's a really good question. That's not really something I've put tons of thought into. But generally, I assume that if you're ever engaged in business directly with the council, that would form part of your register of interests. And I know that that has increased in recent years, in which the amount of sort of interest we have to register directly with central government. So that should, I think, theoretically be registered. I don't know if that's something that a decision that we ourselves would make, but I'm not quite sure on the direct circumstances that sort of influenced Braddon. But I think that whatever we would do would be to try and sort of maximize the value. I do think that there's been a commercialization of certain parts of TT that make it inaccessible to some people, but that's beyond my sort of scope of knowledge, I think.
Okay, well, thanks for raising that, Adam. Good to hear from you.
It'd be good if Manx Radio have a look then, at least. Or
We've taken note of that. Thanks for calling today. Of course, the council does rent certain bits of itself. I mean, it's a wedding venue, isn't it, at some point?
Yeah. So one of the things we do is, so the council does derive income from providing a few sort of activities, including sort of, you can see we're working with, there's a lot of private-public partnerships. So including the Isle of Man Food Festival happening at sort of on TT Bottleneck Car Park, and we work with private sector businesses to try and promote and boost Douglas. We also rent out a lot of property toward a lot of businesses, often at reduced rates. We give the Manx Legion is and Market Hall are sort of owned by the council.
And very quietly in the background is the golf course as well.
The golf course is definitely something there, and that's one of those things. We've reduced the subsidy that we pay toward that by quite a significant margin, but it still provides an affordable service to people who otherwise wouldn't be able to access golf.
Okay, and it is, let me see, with us is Rich. Hi, Rich, you're live with Devon Watson.
Hiya, I'm just talking about the play parks, and especially the play park in Governors Hill area. It's an area I've lived in for the past 13 years or so, and I've got three kids. So obviously we take them out to all the parks around Douglas and island wide, and it's really noticeable the condition of Douglas Hill, Governors Hill Play Park, not only the condition, but also the facilities there. They're really dated and really neglected, especially compared to pretty much every other park I've been to, like Farm Hill and Ballafton. They've got much more updated and more engaging and interactive facilities for the kids, you know, and the older kids as well, zip lines, as well as even machines that elderly people or adults can use for general fitness, because it's quite a big area. And the area that we live in, it's right between two large schools. It's a densely family populated area. And it's just mad that Governors Hill seems to have been neglected by the council, especially in comparison with other estates. And it's just a shame that the local pub seems to have better facilities for the kids than what the council's providing.
Okay, now, all right, Devon?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, especially when you look at one of the benefits of parks is also they get kids off iPads. They give benefits long term. I mean, the more you play in a park, the better your long term sort of even mental development is. So one thing that we are doing is I have seen a lot of the concern around Governors Hill Park, and we're having a 10-year park plan being brought to the Regeneration Committee as of July. And I know that this is something that Councillor Natalie Byron, who heads up that committee, is really, really committed on. And so from there, we should be able to get a timetable of when that park does get renovated. I can't say that I can guarantee it'll be in the next year, 2 years. Obviously, a lot of effort and focus is going to be put into that large play park on the promenade. Yeah. But Governors Hill absolutely requires investment. And we also need a park maintenance budget, which we've not had as of yet. So that needs to be re-established.
Hasn't been a maintenance budget.
Well, there has been. It's sort of taken out of sort of our capital projects. And that's sort of something that we work directly right with. But we need to re-establish and sort of really reinvest in sort of creating a sort of substantial maintenance budget so we can sort of invest. Forgive me for like misspeaking there for a sec.
Yeah, but you accept the principle that parks for kids and play parks are a good idea.
Yeah, it's one of our core responsibilities. And in fact, they need to be invested in. And I mean, there's also a lot of like innovative work happening around parks. I know that our outgoing councillor, sort of Andrew Bentley, sort of put a lot of work into sort of creating strategies around parks, and that's one of the things that will create that 10-year plan. So we've got a 10-year plan for housing, and we're going to create a 10-year plan for parks, so that not only can we sort of create a timeline, but also so that families in the areas know when these investments are going to be made.
So what sort of state is it in, the Governors Hill Park?
Well, a safety standard has just been kind of repaired. There's been trip hazards and stuff. They've lately just been repaired, and it's rusty. It's dated. It's not engaging for the kids. And the timescale we're talking about here is quite a worry. A 10-year plan. And I've lived there for 13 years, and all they've done is a bit of paint and fixed a bench. And it's not really good facilities for the area. If you have kids, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's okay. The workout just pushing that roundabout about.
Okay, well, we appreciate that, Rich. Thanks for raising that. And also, somebody's mentioned the play equipment at Nobles Park as well has seen better days.
Yeah, 100%. These things need to be, we need to have that investment.
Is it tens of thousands of pounds?
It's more. I mean, play equipment, especially play equipment that meets modern safety standards, can cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. And I mean, yeah, you could buy sort of substandard equipment from China. China. And every so often someone will send through an email that says, hey, listen, why don't you just buy this instead, knock up a few. But I think that if you really want to meet those safety standards, you're looking to invest a significant amount of money that does cost quite a lot. And that's why when we say a 10-year housing plan, I mean a 10-year sort of park plan, we don't mean that it'll be done in 10 years, rather that we're planning 10 years into the future, right, given those costs, so that 4 years from now, people know that this will be sort of, this will be done.
Okay. Just give us a quick word on the new play area at the Prom. What's the timetable on that?
Not sure on the exact timetable on that. I know that these plans are going to be sort of brought forward to committee. I know that we're sort of working through the planning processes. This is one of those things that it gets delegated to the committee, so I'm going to have to chat to them to sort of get some more information. Happy to get those committee chairs on the man line at any point so we can have those conversations. But hopefully, fairly soonish before the end of my term, looking to have those done and sorted, and we're hoping that'll be a big improvement on what came before it.
Okay, and Tony, hello Tony, you're live with Devon Watson.
Hello, good afternoon Andrew, good afternoon Devon. Just ringing actually about the new thing, what were you, the three legs of man's thing on the roundabout opposite the sea terminal?
Yeah.
Was it £36,000?
Yeah, that was £36,000, yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't that money have been better spent on some of the housing or the pavements or street lighting or promenade festoon lighting, what we used to have?
So one of the core things, a sort of misapprehension that I sort of need to sort of clear up, is housing money and normal rate money, they never mix, they never touch one another. So for example, money for housing is ring-fenced specifically for housing, so all of the rental money that comes in from housing directly goes back into housing with a small deficiency top-up from central government. And then rate-borne money is completely set aside to one area. So as far as I'm aware, this was decided before my time, but taking a look at that lighting column, that lighting column would have had to be replaced anyway. And it's one of those things... Oh, sorry, yeah, so that lighting column would have had to be replaced anyway, and I think the difference in cost between standard streetlight and the improvement is marginal at the end of the day.
Okay, I take it...
A standard streetlight is not £36,000.
No, of course not, but I think it's one of those as well, no, where you're investing in sort of like a Manx national symbol, and I think the public opinion right now is mixed. I mean, I've had a lot of people say that they hate it, I've had a lot of people come up and say that they really like it, and it's going to sort of have additional lighting options as we go forward, but that area does need to be lit, it does need to be lighted.
Okay. Yeah, so what do you do? Do you supply the people when they come off the boat with a helicopter so they can get up and have a look at it?
I mean, we're going to look into that. I mean, that sounds great, you know, but I mean, I think...
It's absolutely ridiculous what it is.
I mean, I think...
The person who actually signed that off should be shot.
Shot, really?
I don't think we go that far. Well, as you say, opinion is divided about it yet, so we'll wait for the benefit of some time.
I mean, that's certainly one way of holding people accountable, yeah, right? I mean, I feel like direct engagement with the voters there. Yeah, very keen.
Don't think we go that far. And a note in from, let me see, this is 528 just said, Balaquail Road is terrible. I ride a motorbike there and have to detour not to to damage my bicycle. And a note, I've got a long one here. So Pam dropped a note in. I'm a resident of Barool Road, Williston, and would like to point out that the whole of Williston estate's been affected by the ongoing renovation since 2012. There are currently two depots in Williston, one on the green bordered by Barool Road, Williston, Crescent and Snaefell Road. This has been in situ since 2012, that's 13 years ago. The other occupies and where two houses were demolished on Snaefell Road. Now, this particular site operated for some considerable time without planning permission, and only recently has the City Council obtained permission. This is partly due to my daughter's efforts in bringing the lack of permission to the fore, and the effect effect it's had on her and other residents. Stay with me. Barool Road, there are two parts, has been impacted by lorries serving the new apartments being built opposite the Williston shops for the last couple of years. And whilst these are nearing completion, the surrounding area has had to suffer the dirt and noise of traffic. Now, I appreciate it's not possible to make an omelette without breaking eggs, but the residents of Williston feel we've been neglected as nobody really wants to help or listen. I sympathise with this situation and the residents of Ballinard Road, Norwood Road and Park Avenue, but it would be unfair to offer them a rate reduction when the residents of Williston Estate have been told that it is not possible for us to get a rate reduction. Only now, when the works are possibly going to have an impact on private properties, has this situation been brought to the fore. Finally, if this site's going to be there for possibly 10 years, can you believe this is going to have taken nearly 25 years? Apologies for the length of this message, but could this be addressed to Devon Watson when on your programme?
Okay, brilliant. I'm not sure that people have been offered specific rate reductions.
I think people are asking for them on the private bit, on Ballinard Road.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I feel like there has to be sort of a degree of equity between private and social housing. So, I mean, I think a big part of what's happened here is that we've invested £40 million into Williston. This is the largest investment on social housing that is currently happening anywhere on the island at the moment. And this is 774 homes that are currently being renovated and sort of done up and sort of brought up to modern standards, at least from an external perspective. And a big part of that is going to be revolve around sort of some construction disruption. I love the fact that communities are sort of organizing together to sort of bring concerns forward to council, that neighbors are chatting together to sort of bring forward these sort of concerns that exist. And I really think that Williston, one of the things that makes Williston as good as it is the fact that it is such a coordinated and sort of caring community that collaborates so deeply with each other. So one thing that I'm really keen to do is see that there's a bit of equity there, make sure that that disruption is limited. So I know that when we put this new compound in, we've tried to make sure that play facilities are available less than 2 minutes away from where they put in, that there's been a new path installed so that people can sort of access that, and that the residents of Williston can sort of get that land back from where they've had it, and then there's just a bit of fairness and equity in how these things are sort of done. At the end of the day, I want to try and minimize as much sort of construction disruption that people have had, but a big part of this as well is how do you maximize the available resources at the time.
Okay.
Oh, hello. This is Anne. I live on Central Promenade, and everyone's tried to get those lovely lights back. It's miserable. After the Villa Marina, it's like gloomy, dull, uninteresting in the evening. The prom looked so lovely when you sailed in of an evening when we had the fairy lights. Palace Road is beautiful. Douglas Head is beautiful. Please, please, Steve David Cretney can possibly have a look and help us. It's miserable. Thank you very much.
That was a message that came in when Mr. Cretney was on last Friday, so we couldn't do it then. You must have heard this many times before.
Yeah, I know. I know that
people want the festoon lights back.
Yeah, and so a lot of the festoon lighting is around the rest of town. It does look very nice, and I agree that there is a sort of a big element of sort of coming back on the boat and being able to see that sort of festoon lighting come through. So essentially, what I'd like to do is I'd like to get a report done, sort of see how much it would cost to sort of put festoon lighting on the prom, and then what we can do is we can sort of bring that forward to people to sort of. People can sort of get that feedback and make that decision themselves, see how much that would cost. And because I definitely think that this is not an issue that has gone away, this is not an issue that's going away, and that definitely does need to be brought forward toward people so we can sort of essentially have that decision. I've never really been committed specifically to any decision councils made in the past or going forward. At the end of the day, it's the ratepayers and it's the citizens of Douglas who make these choices, and I just have to listen to that.
You've mentioned many times about engaging with people.
Yeah.
So if people want to get in touch with Devon Watson or any councillor, what do they do?
So essentially, you can find all of our details on council website. There are one or two occasions where all of us might miss an email, so just send a follow up if we do. Just because of the sheer volume that we do get, I'd really do appreciate the patience that many people have had with us. But a better route as well is enquiries@douglas.gov.im. That's a great way to get forward. Or if you have got specific concerns, for example, housing@douglas.gov.im, you can can get in touch. All of our contact details on council website. So please get in touch, or better yet, just give me a call, ring me, WhatsApp. All of those are also available. So as long as I'm not at work, I'll generally be able to pick up.
Okay, douglas.gov.im is the website for Douglas City Council. And today, the leader of Douglas City Council, Devon Watson, is with us.
When couples decide to part, there's a lot to deal with. There's the matter of the children, the matter of your property, the matter of pensions. You need to consider the matter of existing wills, and perhaps the matter of a business. And because you matter, Mann Benham Advocates are here for you when it comes to divorce and family matters. For help and advice and a free initial consultation, call Mann Benham on 639 350.
Mann Benham, here for you.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look and your windows let in rain, keep those cold breezes out and make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Quality through and through. Great work guaranteed to you. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows.
Drive smarter. Drive more reliable. Drive a great deal at Mann in Motors. With a superb range of cars for every budget, always available. And if we don't have it, we'll source it. Plus, servicing, valeting and prestige detailing too. Mann in Motors, Richmond Hill, Douglas. Find us on Facebook or call 420-420. That's 420-420. Drive a better bargain at Mann in Motors.
Fed up with the shabby state of some parts of the island, dismayed by the grout and litter you pass daily, angered by the decaying nature of the island's infrastructure? Well, what are you going to do about it? That's the challenge set by the Destination First Board, whose remit is to significantly improve the look of our island and to motivate us all to get involved making the island a better place. Find out more about the work of the board on Perspective this Sunday at 12 on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. Rather than just moaning about the state of the island, why not join the happy band of Cape Crusaders with a litter picker in one hand and a paintbrush in the other, and make the island a better place.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Dan Watson's here, leader of Douglas City Council. You just want to clarify the lighting installation by the sea terminal, yeah?
Yeah, so I just had a message and that just sort of clarified that this is a DUI project, not a Douglas Council project. The local authority just installed that. But at the end of the day, what I don't want to do is I don't want to do the buck passing thing that, oh, this is DOI's fault, this is Treasury's fault, this is our fault. I mean, none of these projects can happen non-collaboratively. And at the end of the day, the buck does have to stop somewhere. So if you don't like something, I want to clarify to people that the buck should stop with myself. And if you do have concerns or queries, please get in touch. And I might not be able to solve the issue, but I can certainly raise it and I can certainly do my best within sort of available constraints.
Okay, Jewin's with us now. Hi, Jewin, you're live with Devon Watson.
I can hear the wheels screeching at Douglas Police Station there now as they send the firearms unit out to get Tony's shotgun. How are you, Andy? How are you?
Well, very bad. I mean, all joking aside, that's improper language and it's not something we like.
I get that by the quickness of you shutting them off there, Andy. Devon, I spoke with Dave Cretney the other day. I brought up one point. I've got a couple of points here I want to bring up. I'll be as quick as I can. The bi-weekly bin collection, the state of the lanes, especially around the area that Dave Cretney said that you're actually in. The thought plan behind the bi-weekly collection, considering the mess that's in the lanes and the environmental health hazard, is one point that I wanted to bring up with you. And the second point that I wanted to bring up was, I believe the railings on the promenade are Douglas Council, they're responsible for them. Is that correct?
Yes, that is, yeah. So what's the question?
The question is, and I've said on this programme now for maybe 2 years, 3 years, and it's really going back to the point that the man's made about the playground in Williston. It's the upkeep of stuff rather than, I understand your ring fencing and E-line items for future, but the upkeep of stuff, I look at the promenade and two railings in particular which are actually just lying on the pavement there, and they have done for 2 years. Your inspectors go past in the van with their light flashing every day, and you go past them. And the railings, to me, would take maybe a morning's work with a welder to put them back in place. But as we're the gateway for the island for visitors, it's little things like that. Something that really should, after 2 years of them lying there, should be sorted out.
Okay, all right, first things first, the bi-weekly bin collection. Where do you stand on that?
I support the current bi-weekly bin collection, but what I do want to caveat is that there are some issues that exist for some sort of large apartment blocks. Like, some places do struggle with recycling from time to time. Largely, what we've seen is we've seen a 400% increase in recycling. But what this doesn't mean is that we should ever allow sort of waste standard collections to ever drop. So we should probably be installing large-scale recycling collection points within areas that have a lot of flats and a lot of places that where recycling uptake hasn't really taken part yet.
Right.
And there does need to be greater enforcement, because when you go into a lot of these lanes, what you do see is a lot of recyclable material that is thrown away inside standard bin sort of waste bins. And I think that once we sort of get recycling as a habitual sort of thing that we do, then the volume of waste that each household produces will be far, far lower. But at the same time, not directly committed to any direct thing. So it's about testing and evidence and policy-based procedures. Personally, it's something that I support because it has had a defined environmental impact. There has been an issue within our lanes for decades now, but it's our job to fix that, and it's our job to make sure that Douglas is a clean city.
So anybody who lives in, say, a block of flats or converted apartments, I mean, they don't have space for a big green bin and a big blue bin, do they?
No, but what we do is we provide bags that you can get. And so those recycling bags are fairly easy to sort of take and sort of lift and move out. And then if you go up sort of Bucks Road on collection day, you'll see a lot of bags sort of stuck in the railings that people can take and sort of bring up and down. Because also, if you're living in a one-bedroom flat by yourself, you're probably producing a lot less recyclable material. But you can get as many bags as you need. But at the same time, we need sort of those communal recycling facilities, so it's easier. We have to, if we want people to recycle, it has to be as easy as possible.
Yeah. Okay. And the fact that the Douglas City, Douglas Town Council, as it was then, put the railings on the prom in 1998. It says so on them, in 1998. So 27 years later, a lot of them are splitting and rusting from the inside. Is there a plan to, have you got the budget for them?
Definitely something I'm going to take a look at. I mean, it's one of those things that last year, I think, or the year before, Charles Gard did that video where he walked along the prom and he walked around Douglas and he saw the sort of state of repair that many parts of the town were in. And I think that rather than, as elected officials, us ever getting defensive and saying that, oh, it's not our problem, oh, we've had resource constraints, it's we just have to get on with it and we just have to deal with these sort of issues. I mean, if the railings are splitting, we're a first world country, we need to make sure that these maintenance schedules are done. And that's one thing that I'm committed to, is making sure that maintenance is done every year. It's something that doesn't show up in it's not as exciting as a sort of a large brand new project, but it's essential, and those maintenance schedules need to be taken a look at.
Okay. Final word, Ewan.
Just coming back to them points, Devin, I think a lot of people don't know anything about the bags. I've certainly not seen any bags when I've been around the area, and I'm around the area quite a lot. So maybe you should do a campaign to make people aware of that. But, of course, with the new pricing for getting rid of fridges and freezers, now you're seeing them dumped in the back streets. So your inspectors are spending a lot of time going through rubbish and trying to find out who they belong to. And with the latest news that I had of bin collections not being collected if the bin lid is open and overflowing, if you will, which is created by the bi-weekly collection, there is a definite problem there. And I agree with you about the recycling. I've been through that myself in another country, trying to get people to recycle. It's very difficult. I understand that. But at the moment, you've got an issue there. On your railings on the promenade, again, I take what you're saying. But again, on this particular aspect, your guys have gone past that every day for 2 years. And that is lying on the promenade. The railless rustus, I called it, because it was lying in the sand at one time. The problem has not gone away. I don't know, you've been in council now for how long? 2 years, 3 years?
All right, okay.
That problem's there.
All
cheers,
right.
Andy.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling today. And I think at the bottom of this is, many people are very, very proud of Douglas, but aren't happy with the way that it looks at the moment. What do you think of the way Douglas looks, Devon?
Yeah, I mean, obviously these investments need to be made, and it's something that I'm committed to. I mean, I think the common throughput in a lot of these concerns and considerations is we've under, not just the council, but central government as a whole, and we've sort of underinvested in the sort of town, the look and feel of a town.
Yeah.
And a town or a city can't just sort of be a collection of homes and businesses. It's also an environment that people live in. And if a place doesn't look good, people won't feel good. So I'm committed. I really love the fact that so many people have rung up engaged. Yeah. And I'm really keen to get involved and sort of make sure that these investments happen to sort of make sure that the city is clean and also make sure that these basic parts of maintenance do get addressed.
Okay. Adam, you're live with Devon Watson. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Devon. Hi, Andy. How are you doing?
We're all very well, thanks. Yeah.
Hey, hey.
Good. I'm just ringing up. I was wondering, Devon, how do you balance the need to replenish and renew the town's housing stock with the need to invest in the built environment and improve the environment of the town and beautify the town? And what do you prioritise?
I think a really core part of this is that we shouldn't view these two things as contradicting one another. So, for example, when we've invested in brand new housing stock, if you look at Anakapul Rose or Williston, these are places where we've simultaneously invested in housing stock, but also these areas look much better than they did decades ago or years ago. And I think at the end of our investment scheme in places like Williston, you're going to see the fact that our town has sort of improved its look and feel. But at the same time, these two things are ring fenced. So the standard maintenance for things like recycling or the railings or parks, that's one part of the budget that doesn't touch housing, that are funded from very different streams and pools. But at the end of the day, housing should look good and architecture has to be invested in. And when you look at how people used to do things 100 or 150 or even 50 years ago, is that that was a consideration. If we build a new block of apartments, they should look good. For example, if you see Peel Road apartments, I think they look good. I think our new Williston apartments are going to look good. And yeah, I just want to say I completely agree with you. And the way we invest in housing can also make the town look a lot better.
Okay, Adam?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's things like the Promenade Gardens and things, and also doing up the centre of Douglas and that sort of thing. And it may not always be the corporation's responsibility, but, you know, there is obviously the gardens. And it leads me on to my second question. My second question to you is, why do you always invest in the parts of town which are already looking so nice, such as the gardens on the promenade, and you don't actually do up, with a specific reference to the promenade, you don't actually do up areas which are declining or areas which need investment, such as the promenade drives or around the back of the promenade, you know? So why is that, Devon?
Okay, well, how are priorities set then?
So we generally prioritise the parts of town that we own and have delegated responsibility for. For example, Promenade Gardens are the sort of thing that we've got responsibility for, so that's where we invest our resources. So I think that what you're highlighting is a much deeper sort of concern that we have, in which local authorities and central government need to be working together at the end of the day. It doesn't matter to the person on the street who has delegated authority for what. At the end of the day, you just need a job to be done. So essentially, we need to be building that deeper sort of cooperation and coordination between ourselves and central government. And when people bring us concerns, we need to be able to sort of echo that. So if the lanes behind Douglas Prom aren't looking good, then we need to be pushing DUI to get those matters resolved.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you, Adam. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay. Here's a question now. When is Douglas Lord Street bus station going to be sorted out?
Douglas Lord Street bus station, that has not been something that has directly been a council sort of responsibility for.
Yes, somebody's got a planning application to build something enormous there as well.
Yeah.
And again, this, as you said, but you put it quite succinctly, people don't care whose responsibility it is.
Mm.
They just want it done. And half the time you're hamstrung because it's not your responsibility.
A core thing that we're trying to do in order to sort of support these sort of things as they take place is Douglas City Council is now a lot more sort of pro-development. So if planning applications come in before, we'd sort of as to how we sort of evaluate them. But now we sort of we will sort of support development if it needs to happen. And we've made quite a few appeals to planning committee to sort of be a lot more sort of pro-development. All we can do is sort of remove roadblocks from our end, and we've removed as many of those as we can. And what we can do is we can lobby. So what we do is we lobby the planning committee to sort of allow these things to happen.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there needs to be requirements that for things like Lord Street Bus Station, they can't just be left as sort of dilapidated car parks for years and years and years. Yeah. Work has to be done, and there have to be requirements on developers, which currently there aren't very many. And vacant properties and vacant lots of land, huge issues in Douglas, need to be addressed.
What was your opinion of the nuisance development that didn't happen?
Oh no, it's absolutely shocking. It's crazy that planning didn't allow that to happen.
The council was for that, weren't they?
The council did support the nuisance development there, and that's something that should have taken place. We actually went to planning committee and made an appeal with the developer to sort of try and get that done. I mean, the key should be a huge centre of nightlife, and there's a lot of places that do an amazing job, but we can't do that if we've got dilapidated, falling apart structures, and our planning regulations need to be a lot more pro-development so that we can actually get, if people have the land and they've got money and they want to invest in town, we need to be supporting these people rather than hamstringing them with red tape and regulations and bureaucracy.
Okay, another question from the answer phone.
Hello, Andy. Can you ask David, will there ever be a scheme in place to purchase your council house? I believe something like 40 years ago, there was one put out and they got little interest. But I would very much like to know if that would ever be possible again. Thank you.
That was another one from last Friday that we didn't get to. Purchasing council houses.
So I'm going to take quite a firm silence on this. So we can look at what the results of Right to Buy in the UK were. And Right to Buy did allow some people to sort of own their own homes. But what it also meant was that the amount of housing stock that they had absolutely collapsed. And that's one of the reasons why if you go into any big city in the UK or even moderately sound sized towns, is that their housing crisis to some extent might be even worse than ours.
There's no case for using the money from the sale to fund another social house.
Well, generally because new construction standards mean as though that math doesn't really work out.
Right.
You could use some of those proceeds to build some proportion of social housing, but it's not enough to sort of fill in that gap. Rather, social housing needs to be sort of a step up. So you go into social housing, you're able to sort of get yourself into sort of an established position, and then when you're finished with that social housing, I'd like another family can come in and use it. Essentially, Right to Buy hasn't worked in the UK, but at the end of the day, if someone can bring forward an evidence-based proposal that this could sort of somehow increase housing stock, obviously wouldn't be firmly opposed to it. But at the end of the day, we need to be increasing the amount of housing stock we have rather than disposing of assets en masse.
Okay. All right. Gaz said, will your guest do something about iffy cycling around town, and can we stop people cycling up and down Strand Street?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's
it's
already...
It's against the law, isn't it, to cycle down?
Yeah, I already think that there are already regulations around dangerous cycling. I think
okay.
That's something that's already done.
Does the council have an officer to monitor this
I thing? Think there are some bylaws. We've got bylaws officers, but I don't think this is within the purview of our bylaws. And I think one of the core issues, one of the things that's come up again and again, is that there isn't that firm distinction between what are council responsibilities and what happens as sort of national government. Obviously, there could be signage that's put up to sort of, because obviously if you're walking down the street and there's like fast moving cyclists down there and it makes people feel concerned or threatened, that's something that should be dealt with and addressed. But at the same time, because people should be able to just cycle on the problem if they need to get from point A to point B, because that infrastructure does exist.
Okay, back with Devon Watson in just a few moments.
Ginger Hall has it all. The iconic Ginger Hall Selby is open throughout TT. Come and enjoy the fantastic atmosphere and viewing position for all the action. But check race schedules for road closures near Selby. We've takeaway food, sweet treats and hot and cold drinks available all day. Plus our restaurants open every evening as well as fantastic live music. Check out Ginger Hall Hotel on Facebook to find out more. The Ginger Hall really does have it all this TT 2025.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450 500. That's 450 500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
World Class Racing returns to the Isle of Man. And while the TT racers take to the track, Tesco has everything you need to fuel your own adventure, wherever you're watching. From meal deals to barbecue essentials, we'll sort your pit stops this season. Setting up camp? Get race day ready with great value camping gear. With 10 stores open 7 days a week, Tesco are here to keep you on track. Tesco, every little helps.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
Just about out of time with Devon Watson, leader of Douglas City Council. What's the progress by Douglas City Council on re-roofing the two promenade shelters? How's that going?
So currently work on that is currently underway. That's part of our capital schemes project, and that is something that is currently being done, and I think that we're going through the planning process. So that is something that is currently, work is sort of ongoing on that matter.
Okay. A message in from Terry who just says, Mr. Watson seems very collaborative. Does he always get along with everybody?
I try my best. I mean, I think that I try and work well. I mean, I'm willing to fight and sort of hold my ground on things that I'm quite passionate on. And I think anyone who knows me sort of knows that or has interacted with me, particularly online, would know that. But in reality, I think that we're all here to sort of do a good job. Everyone I work with in council, everyone I work with in central government generally wants to do the best that they can. Yeah. And the best thing that you can do is sort of bring people together to sort of make things happen. So I try. I don't always get it right. But yeah.
Okay, so the website address once again is? It's douglas.gov.im, is that right?
Yep, 100%.
And you can contact everybody through there. Well, thanks for being with us today. We've really appreciated it. Thanks for coming. So will you pop back soon?
Brilliant. I'll be back soon and hopefully you can get more of us on here. Thank you so much, Andy. It's been great.
Good to talk to you. Devon Watson, leader of Douglas City Council. If you want to follow up on anything you've heard, the answer phone is on 682 631. And we're back with an open line tomorrow between 12 and 1. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. And enjoy, I'm sorry about the weather, but enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
See you.